Welcome to Beyond the Business, presented by Setup, on-demand tech support, and heard exclusively on News Radio 94.3 WSC. Each week, your hosts Eric Cox and Leslie Haywood welcome successful business leaders and entrepreneurs from across the Lowcountry to talk about what it takes to succeed, not only in business, but in life as well. And now, your hosts, Eric and Leslie.
And great morning, Low Country. Welcome to another edition of Beyond the Business, presented by Setup On Demand Tech Support. I'm one of your hosts, Eric Cox, here as usual on Saturday morning with the lovely and talented
Leslie Haywood. And thank you. The one and only. Actually, you know what? There's like a real estate agent in Florida who has the same name. I get Google alerts for
but
her.
But I meant that just in terms of charm and qualities, the one and only.
Yes. Name. We'll go with that.
I'm sure there's plenty of Leslies, but there's only one Leslie Haywood, co-host of Beyond the Business here on Saturday mornings on 94.3 WSC every Saturday from 8 to 9. Thank you all for getting up, turning the dial, or listening to us on podcast. And certainly, Leslie, another great show last week. We had a real treat.
Yes, that was an interesting and fascinating show last week. We kind of branched out beyond entrepreneurship and spoke with a true leader in his field, Art Moore. He was the VP of programming and executive in charge of production for Live with Kelly and Michael in New York. And he was fascinating. He talked about focus. And some of the things that he said is in his line of work, people are just clamoring to get their foot in the door and do what I think a lot of folks do when entering into their dream industry. And that's saying, you know, I'll do anything. Just put me in, coach. But it was interesting to hear him say it's okay to be flexible when chasing that dream job. But at the same token, make your wishes and focus be known. So he said, focus on what you ultimately want to do, because if you settle for any job, then you will probably settle in other areas, too. And ultimate happiness might elude you. So it's OK to tell people what your passion is in a particular industry. But I think focus is necessary.
I tell you, he's one of those guys you could go have a glass of Cabernet with and just listen to for hours. He's got great stories and a lot in between the lines. So, you know, for me, Leslie, my takeaways were really some of the quotes he had. One was that you have to make your own plan and be your own marketer. He focused on that a lot. And that you're only as good as your last show.
Right.
And here he is, what, 28 years doing what he's doing.
Oh, my God. That stinks for us.
Yeah.
I'm only as good as my last show. Oh, no.
And then he talked about the myth out there about fame and fortune of being in entertainment. And then certainly I would love to, I guess he couldn't talk a lot about some of the stories behind the scenes, but some of his time with Regis and what all that was like would have been great
and
to get that
out.
And Kathy Lee. And but he really did. He really spoke a lot about knowing what you want in your core and being true to who you are and what you want. And certainly I think he has lived his life out in that manner and has exemplified the spirit of living your life for what you want, not for what others want.
Right. And that, I took that to heart as well, because I, you know, with licensing my company, which, of course, we saw on the update recently, I felt like I was trying to make other people happy and not disappointing other people. And my decision to license was based on that. I finally decided, no, this is what I want to do, and forget disappointing other people. So sometimes you've got to be selfish and think about yourself.
There is no question. My wife tells me I do that all the time, so I'm really good at it.
Be selfish.
How about that? Sorry, honey. Anyway, a lot going on in town this weekend. It's a chilly, cold Saturday morning, but we have, what, Siwi in town. We have a lot of politicians in town. It's a busy time in Charleston.
It is, and Siwi marks the unofficial kickoff of spring, typically, here in the Lowcountry, but you wouldn't know it by the way this week is feeling. I mean, the weather is, you know, where's the weather that we had at Christmas? I would give anything for a Christmas morning right now. Brr.
Well, it may be cold outside, but the good news is it's warming up in here. Mm-hmm. Another great guest in the studio today. We're excited to have Andrew Watkins in the studio with us, who is one of New York Times best-selling authors, entrepreneur extraordinaire. So thank you, first of all, Andrew, for getting up on a Saturday morning and joining us here in the studio.
You're welcome. It's great to be here.
We are definitely looking forward to diving in and hearing all about your track and history and all the great things that you've been doing. But before we do, we certainly need to recognize our sponsor this morning. who, again, unfortunately cannot be with us, but there's a great reason for that.
I know. We welcomed in his little baby, so he's taking some parental time.
So, Matt Provo and Nicole, congratulations to you on little May that has come into the world this past week. I know you're all having a great and probably sleepless week.
Those first weeks are horrible.
It is challenging, but congratulations. And we really appreciate what Matt and Setup means to this show. Again, we've talked about it going back into December. Setup is an on-demand tech support company. And the premise of it is if you have issues with any of your technology, that could be your devices, such as your phones and your iPads. It could be at home with your smart TVs and stereos. If you're having trouble with it, you're having something that's not working, it's broken, or you just want to know how the heck to use your technology better, what a great outlet. And that's to call those folks over at Setup, 855-738-8736. You can always go to their website as well at trysetup.com.
And are they still offering that? If you like their Facebook page, you get a free hour?
That is correct. I believe we're winding that down coming at the end of February. So if you go onto Facebook to the Try Setup site, like it, you'll get your free hour of on-demand tech support for free, which is hard to beat.
And while you're on Facebook, check out Beyond the Business. And on Twitter, follow us at BTBCHS. Use hashtag BTBCHS and come find us and talk to us beyond Saturday morning and find out what's going on beyond the business.
And when we come back from this break, again, we're going to have Andrew Watkins in the studio, New York Times bestselling author. Go get that coffee warmed up. We'll be back after this short break.
You're listening to Beyond the Business, presented by Setup, on-demand tech support.
Welcome back to Beyond the Business, where we talk to people you know about stories you don't. Brought to you by Setup, on-demand tech support. I'm Leslie Haywood, along with Eric Cox, and today we are talking to New York Times best-selling author, entrepreneur, and marketing dynamo, Andrew Watkins. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm so glad that you're here. And you and I have known each other for a little while, and I just can't wait to dive into everything that you've got going on. And we usually like to start back in your childhood. And I know you have a lot to say about those growing up years. But before we do, let us know a little bit about who you are and what you've got going on right now.
I am a New York Times bestselling author, as you've said several times, of the book Not Without My Father, which is a memoir about my 444-mile walk of the Natchez Trace from Natchez, Mississippi to Nashville, Tennessee. I did that to launch my debut novel, To Live Forever, An Afterlife Journey of Meriwether Lewis. And I needed a wingman to do the trip with me, and the only person available was my 80-year-old dad, who I couldn't stand. So the memoir is more about my relationship with my dad and the revelations of that, and we'll talk about that in a bit. I do a lot of traveling with my books, obviously, and a lot of public speaking and talking about that, so that's a lot of fun, too. I get out and meet a lot of readers and hear a lot of their stories about how this book has changed their lives and relationships, so that's really awesome.
Well, we're excited to get to dive into all that, but as Leslie mentioned, before we do, we're going to do a little trip of our own backwards down memory lane. So talk a little bit about growing up actually in South Carolina, if I understand correctly, but talk a little bit about what life was like as a child.
I was born outside of Nashville, Tennessee. We moved to Florence, South Carolina, a couple hours north of here when I was 4 years old, so I guess I am more South Carolinian than anything. And I grew up in a very strict fundamentalist home, very small school. My parents were very strict with me. The first movie I ever saw was Ghostbusters when I was 15, and I was asked on a date. Yes.
Wow.
I was asked on a date, and I told my parents that I would die if they didn't let me go on this date with this boy. So first movie I ever saw was that. I went to college at Francis Marion in Florence because my mother was afraid I would become a hellion if I went anywhere else. So I had to live at home and go to college there. I majored in accounting, even though I wanted to major in musical theater because I'm more right brain than left brain. But I couldn't do that because my mom believed that I needed to have a career that was useful so that when I got married and had children, I could work part time. So I was a good Southern
mom
girl.
Had it all planned out,
yeah,
right?
She did. So I was a good Southern girl, and I did what she wanted me to do and moved to Charleston at the age of 22. It was a good buffer zone. I don't know if you remember that in Seinfeld. They couldn't show up at my my house.
Right. You need the good buffer. Right.
Right.
Well, there you have it, Leslie, in 1 minute and 20 seconds from 0 to 22 years old.
I know. Exactly. No, we're not going to let you get. No, we're not going to let you
going
jump
back
ahead.
Again.
No. We're going back to those early years.
Okay.
So what did your parents do?
My dad was a forester, and he managed wood procurement for what ended up being International Paper Company when he retired. My mother was a stay-at-home mother until my younger brother, who's 4 years younger than me, started kindergarten, and then she was the bookkeeper at our private school. And she did that for most of her life.
And in terms of, you know, being young, what kind of student were you? What kind of kid were you? Did you were you involved in extracurricular activities? Were you all studious or none of the above?
I did well in school. I was book smart. I was valedictorian of my graduating class in high school.
Oh, wow.
Got scholarships to college. I was a cheerleader, which my husband thought was really funny. When we went back to my 20th high school reunion, he found out that I was the head cheerleader of our cheerleading squad.
Leslie may actually ask for some demonstration or something here.
Oh,
so
yay.
Be careful what you do. Acknowledge
go,
here.
Andrew, go.
But yeah, I was involved in a lot of extracurriculars. I was on the debate team in high school, and I played the piano competitively. So I did a lot of different things like that and did theater.
Now, during this time, what were some of the things that interested you? Could you see inklings of your future career as an author in school at this young?
My teachers always told me that I had a knack for writing. And I laughed at them. When I was in college, I had a professor who wrote for the show Moonlighting. I don't know if you remember that show.
Moonlighting. Oh, my gosh. You're taking me back. Bruce Willis.
Yeah. And so he would bleed all over my papers and say, you need to major in writing. You have a gift. And I just laughed and thought, you know, how do people make money writing? That's stupid. And I still don't know how they do, but
someday.
But, you know, I didn't want to pursue something that I didn't think would do well financially. My parents certainly weren't supportive of that, given that they were paying for me to go to college for the part that wasn't scholarship driven. So I put that aside and didn't really pursue that. I was always very creative theatrically, so I did a lot of stage productions in high school and college, and that was how I worked through my creative juices back then.
So when you were junior high school, what were you thinking? This is probably what I'm going to end up doing in the future.
I had no idea what I was going to do in junior high. In high school, I toyed around with the idea of being a broadcast journalist and being a reporter. And then I was really interested in theater and musical theater. And so those were the things that I was passionate about. But I wasn't like kids today. I never really thought I had to decide what I was going to be when I grew up.
Right. Right. Oh, I think that nowadays there is a whole lot of pressure on kids to pick a lane, even in high school.
That's about 8 or 9 years old. You got to kind of figure that out.
Yeah. Well, and nowadays the high schools are so big, they actually have different tracks, you know, like you can go in certain directions in high school. I'm like, oh my gosh, I had no idea what I wanted to do.
Well,
I have
a niece who's 13 and she's very concerned about picking what she's going to do.
See?
And I'm like, I've changed 4 times. You don't have to decide right now.
Yes,
but
I agree.
There is a lot of pressure.
Any young kids out there listening, you don't have to decide at 13.
So at Francis Marion, you said before that you were studying some to become CPA in accounting classes and things along those lines. Was that a track that you were thinking at that time? Obviously, your mom had some background in that you were going to travel?
I took an accounting class because I had to for a business major, and it was one of the most challenging things I'd ever done. So I really did enjoy it. My accounting professor ended up being one of my mentors, and I still keep in touch with his son. And so it's really kind of cool to have had someone influence me like that and make me passionate about a profession that I never thought I would do well in. I graduated magna cum laude. I passed the CPA exam. I mean, and my brain was not hardwired to do that. So it ended up being good for my brain to put it through that.
So what was your first role coming out of college?
I worked at a small CPA firm here in Charleston and was a staff accountant. And I did tax accounting for 11 years here.
Wow.
Now, during that time, so you said you had your creative outlet in theater back then. Having a job as a CPA in Charleston, where was your creative outlet?
It was
then?
Theater. I did a
you
lot
still
of plays.
Continued?
Yeah, a lot of community theater here.
Really?
In the off seasons. Yeah. So it was really great for me to be able to do that. It probably kept me in public accounting longer than I would have been otherwise because I was miserable. I hated it.
I can't see
creative
you doing
accountants
that.
Go to jail.
Creative accountants go to
That's a good
jail.
Point. That is a good point.
Right. That's one thing. That's a quality you do not want in your accountant is yeah. creativity.
And so as you went through not only the schooling phase, you mentioned your accounting professor that had some influence in your life. And then you had this 11 years as a staff accountant. Was there anyone in your life coming up through that time that you can look back at this have really shaped or influenced you or helped you in terms of your new direction?
Wow. I had someone come to me at the end of that time. I was managing a CPA firm. It was 11 years into it. I was really unhappy. And my first boss actually came to me for out of college and said, I have this client who has this law firm, and I think you'd be really good managing this firm. I think you have the skills necessary to do a good job with that. And so I interviewed for that and ended up running two different big firms like that over the course of several years here and leaving public accounting. Learned so much in those jobs and really enjoyed that. So his counsel did impact the direction of my life and career at that point.
But it seems like it's still along the same vein, you know, CPA to a law office.
Yeah, I did all the CFO work, obviously, but I also had to manage human resources. I managed the marketing. I managed property. So it was a lot more encompassing of the business than just the numbers.
Crunching.
And
right.
So it gave me an opportunity to be creative in different ways in my job. And I enjoyed that.
Now, did you pick up a pen at any point during this time?
Or? Yes. Actually, I was writing a lot privately in my journal and things like that. Even then, I didn't realize that that was something that I needed to do for me. It was just something I did.
By the way, in case you're wondering who's that voice belongs to, it's that of Andrew Watkins, who is one of the New York Times bestselling authors, entrepreneur, and is Leslie deemed her marketing
dynamo.
I love to. I can't wait to get to that part. That's exciting. And so let's talk about that time as it's winding down in terms of the accounting practice and you thinking about this just isn't going to work. I'm not happy. This is not my thing. Walk us through emotionally what that was like.
Well, Leslie and I were talking earlier before we started about how people expect things of you. And that was very much for me. I felt like walking away from public accounting would be letting other people down or people would be disappointed in me because I was making a change. And I had to at some point realize that if I wasn't happy with my life and what I was doing, then it really didn't matter what anybody else thought. And really nobody cared what I was doing anyway. So I made the change and made the decision to make myself happy or try to make myself happy.
So I'm still one here, Leslie. So I'm going to follow up on that, Andrew. If there's someone out here listening this morning and they're in a role like that, they're in a situation and they're doing it because it pays the bills. They're doing it because that's what they're expected to do, but it's not in their heart. It's not in their soul. What would you give them as advice? Because that's not just an easy thing to say, okay, I'll walk away.
Well, you know, for the longest time, that was me. The first career that I've had that I really feel passionately about is the one I'm doing now. So I've had three careers that I wasn't so passionate about. And I did those things for different reasons. Money was obviously a reason until I met my husband and he gave me some opportunities to be more independent. I really had to pay my own bills and put a roof over my head. So my choices were limited. But even when you're in a position where you may not be as happy and you have to make choices to pay bills, you can still find outlets that feed your passion and feed your soul. And those are the things that will help fire you to get you to the next point in life and to something that does fuel your passions and make you happy. So I don't think people should ever give up on their passions. I mean, I was 40 when I started following my passion.
And how
so it's
did
never
that,
too late.
It's never too late. No, you are so right. And what did that start to look like? finding writing as a job, as a career, how did you start looking at the things that you were writing and saying, you know what, this is the direction that I want to go?
It was all an accident. I turned 40 in 2009. The economy crashed in 2009. And I had had a consulting firm helping people grow their businesses. And of course, nobody thought they could grow their business in 2009 because nothing was growing. So I was at a point in my life where I had to make a choice. Do I figure out how to reinvigorate this business that doesn't really make me very happy? Or do I do something to try to make myself happy? And so I started writing publicly for the first time. I started a blog like a lot of people do. And I started writing on that every day and ended up with a following, and it led to me actually being a writer. I didn't just jump off a cliff one day and say, I'm going to write a book. It was a step-by-step process of things that I did over several years to get there.
But you did jump off a cliff when it comes to leaving. I think you were working for an attorney at the time. And started your own consulting firm.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
So, you know, we love, certainly on this show, Beyond the Business. It's all about the entrepreneur spirit. What was that like to decide, okay, after, what is this, about 11 or more years, I'm going to leave working for somebody and go do this on my own?
It was really awesome. I loved, loved being my own boss. I still do. I loved how I could make decisions about what clients I wanted to take. I loved learning about different businesses versus just focusing on one type of business. I made several clients millionaires through their following my advice to grow their businesses. That was really great to watch happen. But the longer I did it, the more I realized I wasn't really building anything that I could sell. And I wasn't, you know, I could only make money when I was selling my brain. And so that to me was not sustainable. So several years in, I thought I need to be figuring out what else I'm going to do, but I'm still getting clients and I'm still making money. So I'm not going to worry about that right now.
Is there something that you would have done differently back then? Can you pinpoint like maybe a mistake that you made? Because a lot of times our listeners, they learn from the mistakes of others. And so when you did jump off the cliff and you were, you know, awesome and started your own business, is there any advice that you can give for someone that is looking to do just that?
I did a lot of research before I started my business. And from my accounting background, I knew how to start a business. I knew what things needed to be done. So there weren't any real mistakes that I made in terms of setting it up. I did a lot of networking in advance and got out of the gate with several paying clients. So I didn't just hang up a shingle without knowing that I was going to have some income coming in. So those are mistakes that I saw clients making all the time, where they would just decide, I'm going to start this business and I'm not going to do any research at all in terms of what kinds of capital I need or what I need to do to make it sustainable. And they just start it and think that everything's going to be great.
Right.
And 6 months later, it's not. So I didn't make mistakes like that.
That you saw a lot of people make. Due diligence.
Yeah.
And that's awesome. We've talked on the show a couple of times how it's good to have a village or a following before you even put that open for business sign out. So that's wonderful advice.
Now, starting the writing thing was a very different thing. If I had known how hard it was going to be, I never probably would have done it. So I'm glad I didn't know.
That is a huge shift to go from making income by getting clients that you help move their business forward to selling books.
Right.
So it's a whole different shift in mentality. As you're going through that transition to become an author, you just talked about when you started your first business, you did your homework, you had clients lined up. Was there a parallelism in what you did to become an author?
Yeah, I had a following online of people, and so I had a core readership. And I thought, you know, these people will buy my books and I will build that pool of people as I become more well known. I think that the mistake a lot of authors make is in overestimating how many people will actually purchase their books. You think most of the people who know you will, and it's really very few people who know you that ever will. So that and I listen to people talk about authors who are much bigger than me talk about this process. And I thought, oh, that won't happen to me. You know, my friends will support me, or these people will be here for me. And really everything that people have said would happen has happened to me. So it is a process of shedding things as you go. I feel like I'm peeling back an onion and figuring out more and more how strong I am and who I am as I do this.
So how has your family been supportive of you being an author now? I know that that was something, you know, early on they wouldn't have chosen for you.
It's been an interesting journey because my parents were very unsupportive of it for the longest time. My mother would get on my blog and say horrible comments.
Oh, my gosh.
That helps.
Yeah.
Your mother would.
Yeah. I mean, I'd have readers email privately and be like, what is with your mom?
Who is that lady? What? She's my mom.
So, you know, they weren't very supportive of what I was trying to do. And it was only when my mother read my novel, which my father still hasn't read, but my mother read my novel, that she really saw that I was talented enough to do this and enjoyed it. And it made her cry. And she was calling all of her sisters and telling them that they had to read it and how proud she was of me. And that was really the first time that either of my parents thought, wow, our daughter is creative and she's doing something amazing and we need to get on board and support that.
So was the negative blogging by your mother for you, was that fuel?
Yeah.
Was that,
yeah,
was
you know, mothers
back?
And daughters have that stuff. So, yeah. Yeah, the more she did that, the more I was like, I'm going to show you. Yeah.
Okay. So to some degree, I hate to say this, but to some degree, we can actually thank mom this morning, right?
Yes, I thank her all the time. Thank you, mom.
That negative reinforcement. Look at me now.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. So your dad still has not read the book, even though he is a huge part of...
He has not read the novel.
Oh, okay. Okay. Okay.
The book about him, he's read.
Oh. I love that. Oh, which is what? Gosh. Not without my father, correct?
Yeah.
Wonderful. So we're going to certainly dive in a little bit more about that. One last question here as we wind down to our break. As you have matured as a individual and certainly an entrepreneur, when you look back over that journey, what advice would you give to our listeners this morning about your journey and how it relates to one who goes through corporate America, works for somebody else, leaves that and starts their own? Would you do anything different, I guess?
No, I wouldn't do anything differently because my life would not be what it is today if I hadn't made the mistakes and made the bad choices and all of the different things that it takes to get me to where I am. I'm so happy with my life right now, and I wouldn't change a thing. But the biggest piece of advice that I would give to anybody is people never stop growing. Some people do, but a lot of people don't. And we have this tendency to remember people the last time we saw them and paint them with whatever brush they were then. And a lot of people continue to grow throughout life. And I know I'm one of those people. And I'm so excited about that. So I always try to meet people and see them in a new and a fresh way every time. And I've had some amazing encounters because of that. And,
wonderful.
And have some different friends and different experiences because of that.
Well, we look forward to hearing about those experiences. We come back from the break in our second half. Again, you've been listening to Andrew Watkins, New York Times bestselling author, entrepreneur, and marketing extraordinaire here on Beyond the Business, presented by Setup On Demand Tech Support. We'll be back after this short break.
You're listening to Beyond the Business, presented by Setup On Demand Tech Support.
And welcome back, Low Country, to another edition of Beyond the Business, presented by Setup On Demand Tech Support. If you're having issues or troubles with your technology, you need somebody to get out there and take care of it, teach you how to use it better, or you just want to learn more about technology, give the folks over at Setup a call at 855-738-8736 or go to the website at trysetup.com. Again, happy Saturday morning. Hopefully you were fortunate enough to catch the first half of our show this morning with Andrew Watkins, New York Times bestselling author, entrepreneur, and marketing guru, sharing the story of how you've gone from working for individuals and companies to starting your own consulting firm to now becoming a New York Times bestselling author. What a journey. So let's dive a little bit into the aspect of being an author and where you are today. You have a novel, two other books, And sounds like something in the works as well.
Yes, yes. I have a New York Times bestselling memoir called Not Without My Father, One Woman's 444-Mile Walk of the Natchez Trace. I have a novel, To Live Forever, An Afterlife Journey of Meriwether Lewis. And I have a picture book of my walk of the Natchez Trace, Natchez Trace Tracks in Time. So those three books. And I'm working on a sequel to my novel. It's called Hard to Die, and it will come out in September of this year.
Now, you touched a little bit on the fact that if you had known how hard it was to be an author, you might not have done it. What has been your biggest surprise in becoming an author? What's so hard about it?
It's really hard to get people to choose your book. There are billions of books. I mean, when I do a talk for the public, I always ask people, how do you choose what to read? And it's always something that's on the New York Times bestseller list, something that I've heard of a billion times, something by Stephen King. You know, people want to know when they read a book that it's going to be good, because a lot of people don't read and they don't want to spend their time that way reading something that's not great or that they haven't heard is great a million times. So it's hard as a nobody author to get people to talk about your books the number of times that it takes to convince people to read them or give them a try. So that's the biggest challenge.
So what is the, you know, what is the magic in that formula? Obviously, there are some books and authors who take off.
There's a lot of luck.
Sometimes overnight.
It's never overnight.
Okay.
It's never overnight. By the time you take off, people think it happened immediately, and there's always this horrible story of, you know, climbing and trying to get to that place that just about anybody has. So there is a lot of luck involved in getting to that place, I think. And talent. You have to produce good products.
Now, how do you market? You do a lot of the marketing yourself, correct?
Yes.
And what have you found works best to market a book? I know I had a product and you wanted to sell a product. That's why you got out of the consulting business. How have you found what marketing tools work best for marketing a book?
Well, the typical advice today for authors is to write books as fast as you can, get them out as fast as you can, and have as many as you can, which means that a lot of books are terrible. And I hope mine aren't. And I'm not saying that anybody who's listening who's written a book, your book is terrible. I'm not saying that. But it takes time to produce a quality product of any type. So my approach has been to take the time to try to craft products that I can be proud of. And so if I get a couple of books out a year, I will be happy with that. I work with a small press, so I have more flexibility in terms of getting things to market faster as opposed to a bigger press where it takes a long time to get something to market. So I do have flexibility in that respect, but it is still challenging.
So we've alluded throughout the show thus far about particularly the Not Without My Father mm-hmm. book. It sounds like there's a story behind a story. I don't want to give the book away here and there, but I do want to talk a little bit about it as I'm reading a little bit in terms of talks about, can an epic adventure succeed without a hero? And that you were striving to become the first living person to walk the historic 444-mile Natchez Trace as the pioneers did. Couldn't find anybody to really do it with you, and you ended up with your dad. So give us a little insight about sort of what that journey was.
Well, that journey started, and it was a very entrepreneurial, marketing-driven thing for me because I'd written this novel, To Live Forever. I always enjoyed reading academic history books, and I was fascinated with the Lewis and Clark expedition as a kid, you know. But in South Carolina, we really didn't learn about them much. They were this boring little paragraph in our history book. Lewis and Clark went to the Pacific. They came back. That was the end. You write an answer on a test because that's how we teach history. That's boring. You forget about them. So at the age of 33, my husband and I decided to read books out loud together. And the first book that we picked was Undaunted Courage by Stephen Ambrose. And it was about the Lewis and Clark expedition. It won the Pulitzer Prize that year. And so we were reading this book out loud, and I was in hysterics because it was really the first time that I learned that Lewis and Clark and 31 other individuals, primarily 20-year-old men, were screwing their way across the North American continent. pregnant. They were sleeping with everybody. They were having orgies. They were writing about it. A lot of the initial journals had to be redacted because they thought it would be so scandalous. They all had venereal diseases.
I think my history teacher left a few things out, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I slept through history class, and I promise you, that would have woke me up.
That would have definitely.
I say all the time, you know, I would have been fascinated if they had taught history like that when I was in the eighth grade. I mean, everybody would have been. So it was really the first time that I heard history in a way that I thought, wow, that was interesting. And so it was also the first time that I heard how Meriwether Lewis, the captain of the expedition, died. His death is one of America's unsolved mysteries. He died at 35 on the Natchez Trace of two gunshot wounds, one to the head, one to the gut. Some people say he killed himself. Some people say it was murder. I just thought it was sad because when we're gone, we want people to remember us for something. You know, and that really the only way we can live forever is for somebody to remember we were here. So that's the path to immortality. So I started thinking about him and what would it be like since he had this unresolved death, if he could do something else, what would that look like? And I became fascinated with him and fascinated with the Natchez Trace, which is this road, this 10,000-year-old road that we are stewards of as Americans that runs from Natchez, Mississippi to Nashville, Tennessee, and has been used as a footpath for much of its 10,000-year history. And so I started writing this paranormal historical action-adventure novel about him in the afterlife. And I thought, wow, this is so unique, and it's such a good idea, and people are just going to love this. It'll be like The Princess Bride, but, you know, with real history in it, and people will just love that. And it was rejected 100 times, and the last person who rejected it said, you know, I grew up in Oregon. Meriwether Lewis can't be the guardian angel of a little girl, even though I represented the book that turned Abraham Lincoln into a vampire slayer. So I was stuck. I thought, you know, I can change my book. I can make it a straight historical novel, or I can make it a straight fantasy novel. There are all kinds of things that I can do with it to try to find traditional publishing. I probably won't make any money there either. Traditionally published authors make less than a dollar a copy typically on their work. So the notion that authors make a lot of money is totally erroneous. So I thought, you know, I can either publish the book that I really want people to read and that I'm passionate about, or I can change it into something that might be more mainstream. And a small press came to me and said, we'll publish this book as you've written it. So, yay, I'm going to have my baby be birthed, and it's so exciting. But, you know, I didn't know how to get people to choose this not genre-specific paranormal historical action-adventure novel by this woman nobody had heard of. So I thought to myself, you know, if I launch this book with a stunt, then maybe people will pay attention to me. You know, they might not necessarily pick up the book right away, but the stunt might interest them in the book.
Always marketing.
Yeah. So I thought, you know, I'm 43, 44 years old. I'm not an athlete. I couldn't run a mile ever in my life, but I'm going to walk more than a half marathon every day on the Natchez Trace Parkway, this road, this paved highway with no trail, and I'm going to take readers into the world of my novel, and I'm going to blog about it and make videos, and I'll show them what this book is about, and people will be fascinated with this, and by the time I get to the end, I'll do this for 34 days, and I'll get to Nashville, and I'll be on national TV.
Everybody
and I'll
be waiting at the finish line.
Yeah,
right,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. I'll be a New York Times bestselling author, and I'll sell thousands and thousands of these books, and I'm just so smart. And so I started training for this like 2 months before I was going to do it. I'm just an idiot. And I trained around here, had no idea what I was getting into, but I was all in, you know, I was going to do this. And I went to different people in my life asking them to go help me do this, because somebody had to drop me off at one milepost and pick me up 15 mileposts later. A lot of this is in the middle of nowhere in Mississippi. So I needed help to get me around. And we all have these people who drive us insane in our lives. You laughed because you thought of somebody. And so the last person I wanted to do this with was really the only person who could do it. And it was my 80-year-old dad. And I mean, my dad drives me crazy. He's one of these huge Southern Gothic men. He never shuts up. He's awful. But I was desperate for this thing to happen. I wanted this bestseller. I was desperate to do this. So I thought, you know, maybe I'll finally figure out who he is before he's gone. Maybe we'll have some quality time together. So he'll go with me for 5 weeks and do this thing. So I asked him, you know, why don't you go do this with me, Dad? And he's like, living in a hotel with room with you for 5 weeks sounds awful.
So you both agreed on the awful part.
Yeah. You both agreed. This is awful.
I don't want to spend 5 weeks doing anything with you. So I had to go back to him and talk him into it by appealing to his ego and making the story about him. So, you know, I said, you have all these little tiny towns in these places and you can go into the towns while I'm walking every day and you can tell all your stories that I've heard 5 billion times, but they'll be new to all these strangers, Dad. And you can eat crap food and Mom won't know and I won't tell her. And, you know, how's that sound? And he's like, this is the greatest thing ever. I'll totally do that for 5 weeks. So he was all in. And then I was like, again, wow, what have I done? I mean, Dad scratches himself all night and he has gas and I'm going to have to share a bathroom with him. And he has this gut and he doesn't aim very well. And this is just the worst thing I've ever done. But he was all in. And so we started this marketing stunt on March the 1st of 2014, To Live Forever debuted, and I started walking and did 15 miles a day and had no intention of writing a memoir about it. I mean, the Natchez Trace is a parkway. It's like the Blue Ridge Parkway if you haven't been there. So there's no trail. It's cars and trucks and camper vans and me walking on the road. And about the third day in, I realized just how stupid I was. I mean, I had not trained on pavement. I already couldn't get my feet in my shoes. I was already going to lose toenails. My feet were broken open and bloody. My joints were aching because, you know, walking on pavement's not like walking on dirt, like I trained on the Greenway. So it was really just awful. But people were actually paying attention to this, so I couldn't just quit. And I had a bookstore in Nashville, Ann Patchett's bookstore, Parnassus Books, had said, we'll have you in for a party, but you can only come on the day you finish, and you have to talk about being finished. So I couldn't go in there and say,
battered and beaten, here I come, right?
Well, but I couldn't go in there and say, well, I took a lot of rest days because it was really hard.
Right.
And so I've got like 2 more weeks to go. So I had to get out there and do it. So every day I was out there walking 15 miles. Whatever the weather was, I walked through sleet and 20 degrees and sub-zero wind chill. I walked through a tornado warning. I walked through a windstorm that was 50 miles an hour that was blowing me into the highway. Whatever the weather was, I was out there every day. And by the middle of the second week, it was the worst. I mean, I was miserable. My dad and I had a horrible fight because he forgot to pick me up one day. And it was that, you know, you're sitting there and in second grade, I think my parents forgot to pick me up at school. And it was like that. I was really crying like I was 7 and my parents forgot to pick me up. It was horrible. And I couldn't call Dad because there was no cell signal. So we had the massive argument. We're both calling my mom going, if you don't come out here and save us, we're going to kill each other. You have to come out here. We're calling her independently. And she's like, no, I don't want to get in the middle of that. So a couple days later, Dad dropped me off at milepost 165 in the middle of Mississippi. And I started walking and I walked 2 miles and I got this horrible stomach cramp. And I found myself next to a pine tree having diarrhea, 3 horrible bouts of diarrhea. And I was sobbing and I went into my backpack to get my toilet paper out to clean up. And I only had 2 squares of toilet paper because I had not checked my supply that morning before I started out. So I had nothing to clean up with, but my bottle of Gatorade. So I got my Gatorade, dumped it back there, squished it around. And don't ever do that, listeners, because it's really sticky.
That makes the next couple miles walk.
How's that cup of coffee treating y'all this morning, by the way?
Yeah. So I cleaned up as best I could and I got back on the highway and I was holding my cell phone looking for a signal and thought, as soon as I get a signal, I'm calling my father. I'm telling him to come get me. This is the worst idea that's ever been had in the history of ever. And I want to go home. I'll just work at Starbucks and be a barista and be a failure. And that's fine. I can't do this anymore. And I came out of this tunnel of trees on the Trace, and the Trace is managed by the federal government. Either side is either National Forest Service land or it's privately owned farmland. And so I came out of this tunnel of trees and there was this field off to the right, and I just went and collapsed in the field, and it was muddy, and I didn't care. I just was done, and I lay there, and I thought, I can't call Dad, but maybe eventually he'll wonder where I am. It might be midnight, but maybe he'll come looking for me, because I can't do this anymore. I can't walk another step. I'm a failure. I'm done. I want to go home. And I lay there for about 15 minutes, and it was spring on the trace. It was March, and the trees were coming out, and the sky was that pretty sky that we have before it gets really humid and yucky in the south. And I lay there, and there were thousands of daffodils blooming in the field. And after about 15 minutes of looking and listening, I thought, you know, I've been doing this walk like I live my entire life. And like so many people in the 21st century live their entire lives. I've been rushing through every day to get finished as fast as I possibly can because I'm focused on one thing, and that is how much my feet hurt. And I'm missing everything that's happening to me every day because I'm out here walking this walk by myself that nobody walks. I was having birds fly around me, thousands of them every day because I was by myself. They weren't afraid of me. There were way more of them than me. So I was having these experiences like that. I had a deer come out of the woods and walk right next to me one day for more than a mile and not run away. I had a robin land on the white line in front of me and stay with me for several miles and not fly away. So I was having these amazing experiences with nature, and people were stopping and talking to me, and I was hearing their stories, and I was just missing all of that because I was focused on how miserable I was. And that was really the first time that I thought, maybe I have a story that I should be writing about, because we're all doing that now. We're all focused on how full our inboxes are and how much we have to do and what our next appointment is and how stressed out our jobs make us and how horrible life can be sometimes. And we all have amazing things that happen to us every day. And so much of the time we miss it because we're focused on the other stuff. And so I hope I came out of that field a different person and focused on different things. And I came out of the field and almost got run over by a car. So from there, you can read about all kinds of things. I was almost abducted. It was a very big adventure. But the best thing that happened to me from that experience was not all the amazing things that happened every day, or the fact that I could walk 15 miles a day, even though I never thought I could physically do that for 34 days, or that I actually sold a few books and got on the news and had some of that. The best thing that happened was that I got to spend 5 weeks with my 80-year-old dad, who drove me insane, and 3 weeks with my mom, because she did end up coming out for the last of it to try to help us get through. I never thought that I would be happy to have spent that time at midlife with my parents. And we all have these people like that in our lives who are slipping away. And we put off doing things with them because they drive us insane, or it's hard, or we might have some unpleasantness. And so we put things off and we put things off. And then one day that person gets sick, or they pass away, or we're looking at them in a hospital bed. And all we can say then is, wow, I wish I'd done that thing. I wish I'd taken that trip. I wish I'd gone to that lunch. I wish I'd spent that weekend. I wish I had. And I don't want people to meet me or read my books or hear my inspirational talk that I do and end up with a bunch of I wish I had. I wrote Not Without My Father to inspire people to turn I wish I had into I'm glad I did, because I'm so glad I did with my parents.
Wow. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, that was that's pretty amazing. You notice we didn't stop you.
I know. What an amazing story.
And by the way, if that didn't motivate you this morning to get online right now, and I guess I could go to Amazon.com or...
Yeah, it's available wherever. Everywhere online, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, digitally at iTunes and Kobo. There's an audio version at Audible and iTunes as well.
I'm reading it. Not Without My Father.
You need to do that for your trip to Panama,
by
Eric.
Andrew Watkins. I'm actually saying I'm buying this from you as soon as we finish, and taking this with me on the flight. So that's amazing. What an incredible story.
Yes, that's just, and you know, you and I had talked, you know, when you were launching the book about how important memories are that you make with the people around you, because when they are gone, you're right, memories are all that you have.
That's what keeps people alive in our hearts. That's what keeps them with us. And that's not a morbid thing. It's not meant to be sad. I'm glad that I have some new things now to remember about my parents when they're gone, or that they have to remember about me when I'm gone.
And that was completely by accident, born of a marketing stunt to sell another book.
Yes.
Which is accidental.
You never know the twists and turns. And what you just spoke of, and by the way, I'm big on quotes, and I keep all the quotes from the show, so I'm going to take this quote with your permission, and we're going to use it again and again. Turn the thought of "I wish I had" into "I'm glad I did." And that applies to everything in life, including, you know, what we do great on this show, which is talk about entrepreneurship and jumping off the cliff and going for it as a business owner. That was awesome.
Thank you.
No, thank you. Unfortunately, we have to go to our final break. And again, you have been listening to Andrew Watkins, who is New York Times bestselling author and entrepreneur, and obviously a motivational speaker, as we saw here this morning, here on Beyond the Business, presented by SetUp on-demand tech support. Warm up that cup of coffee. We're going to come back for our close after this short break.
You're listening to Beyond the Business, presented by SetUp on-demand tech support.
Welcome back to Beyond the Business. I am still in awe. Andra, you are fascinating, and this book is just amazing. Thank you so much for coming in. I want to touch a little bit on, you have such a strong sense of community and philanthropy, and you're really involved in Rotary and stuff. So talk about your life now. Do you give back? What do you do here in Charleston for other people?
In Charleston, I have taken a break from Rotary because I am gone a lot. I am probably gone half of every month doing appearances around the country. My next group of appearances is up in Raleigh-Durham. Then I go to Cuenca, Ecuador, and I'm keynoting in conference down there. Then I'm on the West Coast. So I do give to Rotary Literacy a portion of the proceeds of all the sales of my books and try to support literacy that way.
Great. And what are you working on now? Tell us a little bit about what you have coming up so that our listeners can look forward to September. Any little teasers?
I am working on a sequel to Live Forever called Hard to Die. I like to take historical figures who have murky or unresolved deaths and give them new stories. And so Hard to Die is about Theodosia Burr Alston, who has some history in Charleston. She was Aaron Burr's daughter, who was the third vice president of the United States under Thomas Jefferson. She married Governor Joseph Alston of South Carolina in probably a political move for her dad. She grew up in New York State and moved down here, and at the age of 29, she disappeared on a ship off the coast of North Carolina. Her 10-year-old son had just died a few months before, so she was distraught. He was her only child, and she disappeared, and so I'm writing a new story for her to give her something else to do.
I love it.
And it's set in the Hudson Valley in 1950, and what's so much fun about this kind of writing is I excavate all these things and end up writing about them. So I found this other story about someone who disappeared in the Hudson Valley in 1950, and he's a character in the book as well. He's the only person who's ever disappeared from West Point as a cadet. So I'm merging those two into a suspense thriller of a story, and I'm really excited about it. I'm in revision mode now. It's back from beta readers. It goes to my editor next month. And then I go to Wales as a writer in residence for a month in June, and we'll be working on the final book in that series, which is called I Am Number 13.
Have you noticed? I just made this connection. So in the beginning, you said that your very first movie at the age of 15 was Ghostbusters. And now all of your novels are giving the dead people afterlife. I just find that so funny.
Well, I think it was pretty cool after listening to your story of the book of Not Without My Father and how all that journey took about. You're writing these new endings for these folks who passed away prematurely and not knowing how, and you create these new endings for them. But your whole journey was about creating a new ending in your life. and really for all of us.
Or a new story. We'll see. Where it ends.
And so how amazing is that, that we're all sitting somewhere today thinking about, you know, the past or the reasons or where we're in the middle of the puddle right now. And it's just really about saying, what are we going to do next and how are we going to change it?
Yeah.
Crazy
yeah,
stuff.
I tell people all the time, get up in the morning and it's a new day and you have another new chance to make a difference.
Well, again, if you, a couple of things, if you missed some of this show today, shame on you. Get up at 8 o'clock and turn us on 94.3 every Saturday morning. But if you did, good news is we're going to have it podcasted. You can go onto the website, acagcharleston.com. It'll take a couple more days for us to get there. But once it is, look at radio podcast and choose the one that says Andrew Watkins, New York Times bestselling author. I promise you it'll be worthwhile of your time to listen to this. Also, go online and order her book, Not Without My Father. Again, there's multiple places you can get it in both print and audio version.
Yeah, yes. Andrew, and where can we, tell us where we can find you on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram?
Facebook, my Facebook author page is Andrew Watkins Author. Please like me. I am on Twitter at Andrew Watkins and Instagram at Andrew Watkins. Pretty much everywhere else online is Andrew Watkins, all one word. You can find me just about anywhere. I also have a YouTube page that you can find me on as well. And my books are available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, iTunes, Kobo, and Audible.
Now, this is a question we like to ask, but I think that everyone knows a whole lot about you. What is one thing that people might not know about you?
One thing that people might not know about me. People listening to this show might not know that I married my stalker.
Oh my gosh. I wish we had time to really
sounds
go
like
into
a whole
nother that.
Show,
I know.
But it's a great tidbit. So unfortunately, we have to end it on that. Sorry, hubby. Andrew Watkins, New York Times bestselling author, entrepreneur. Thank you for your time and a wonderful story today. As usual,
thanks for having me.
Another great show here on Beyond the Business, presented by Setup On Demand Tech Support. We'll look forward to having you back next Saturday morning, 8 o'clock, here on WSC 94.3 and Charleston. In the meantime, have a blessed week.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Business, presented by Setup On Demand Tech Support. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter and tune in next Saturday morning at 8 as Eric and Leslie welcome another dynamic guest. Beyond the Business is presented by Setup On Demand Tech Support and is heard exclusively on News Radio 94.3 WSC.